before now, on numerous occasions actually, and I do this today, I have invoked Reverend Harry Schofield, who served the San Francisco Unitarian Universalist Congregation for 18 years through many Vietnam War protests, censorship battles, a campaign in 1971 to end discrimination against homosexual persons, and much else that raised the flag of justice, equity, and compassion. He died in 2003 at the age of 89. Harry had a regular spiritual practice, and he used to say, set aside a half an hour every single day for your spiritual practice, unless you're really busy, then set aside an hour. And he practiced what he preached. He was lighthearted, funny, compassionate. He was a mentor to countless UU ministers. His obituary quotes him as saying, if you don't have a spiritual practice, you dry up and blow away. Harry knew that a regular honoring of the soul's depth makes for whole human beings and for a healthy religious faith. Harry was very unusual, maybe even unique, in his generation of Unitarian Universalists, particularly ministers, serving through the years where, as a movement, we tended to shy away from religious language, we tended to make fun of the faithful, and we tended to declare that the human is the pinnacle of all creation. I'm extremely glad to say that the majority of us don't fit that description anymore. We seem to understand, by and large, that we are a religious tradition. We are a church. We seem to understand that we can individually be nourished and illuminated by a regular spiritual practice. But we don't get off the hook quite so easily. We still have a tendency to turn away from reflecting on matters of soul, perhaps saying of Unitarian Universalism, oh, we just don't have a spiritual center. We confuse sameness of belief, like what we think about who God and Jesus and all that stuff is, with communal, open sharing of spirit. So we sidestep our personal responsibilities to grapple with mystery. If we don't seem to have a spiritual center, it's our fault. If each of us looked deeply inward and found what it is that calls us to reverence, whatever we call it, and then if we put aside our inclination to see others' calls as less worthy, oh, they're shallow. Oh, they're Christian. Oh, they're humanist. Oh, they're whatever. If we put that aside and then join in truly respectful fellowship, we could be a powerful community honoring mystery in all of its myriad forms. If this fellowship grows into a center where depth of soul is the source of our outreach, our education, our welcoming of the stranger, we will indeed be a force to be reckoned with. And so your Quest Steering Committee, putting on the service this morning, we're preparing an 18-month spiritual journey program that began in the Madison, Wisconsin UU Society. It will start actually in the fall of 2013. It is intensive. It asks participants for the courage to explore deeply with others. And it changes the church because of creating and helping individuals who are closer to their centers. Jackie, our steering committee spiritual director, is an alum, as she said, and she'll tell you of her experiences. Mark, who is a member of the steering committee, looks forward to the individual and community deepening that will arise and flow from this program. We passionately hope that many of you will be interested in the journey. For my part, let me return for a moment to the importance of honoring the spiritual in ourselves and as a center of our church home, creating an ever-deepening place for nourishment and for healing of the world. Jack Kornfield is a Buddhist teacher and a psychologist, and he's quoted in the Quest literature as saying, "Spiritual practice is revolutionary. It allows us to step outside our personal identity, culture, and religion to experience more directly the great music, the great mystery of life." And he also says, "The fruit of transcending our small self is the awakening of reverence, a newfound spirit of compassion, and holy interdependence." Whether you're interested in Quest or not, whether you believe or even care that spiritual openness and centeredness will transform our church, I hope you will reflect a bit on that compassionate, enlightened activist, Harry Schofield. Find the ache in your heart that says, go deeper. Go deeper. Keep at it. Don't stop. And then share it with your community.
I'm Jackie Groves. Good morning. I'll be speaking to you today from the perspective of a person who has experienced and completed the Quest curriculum. Last May 6th, I spoke briefly about Quest in the My Story segment. Today we'll go a little deeper. My purpose is to connect with those of you who may be wondering if Quest is for you. First, I'll tell you a little bit about how I arrived in Quest. I'll tell you about how I experienced it at the time and my sense of how I changed as a result. My religious beliefs were forged at my grandparents' table in Madison, Wisconsin, where they were progressive pillars in the community, particularly in the Unitarian Church. We were dyed-in-the-wool humanists, I was taught. We worshipped at the altar of service to our fellows and belief in their inherent goodness. There was no God involved. I traveled abroad at 14 to South America for a month. My first religious awakening came staring at a primitive stone sculpture of a fertility goddess in the highlands of Colombia. In 1975, as a student abroad in Europe, I stared in awe at the towering cathedrals and wondered about the workers who strained to lift those stones to such heights, driven by their belief in a life thereafter. Now that was faith. From Europe, it was off to the Peace Corps in Africa, an introduction to Islam, prayer multiple times a day, feast days involving the slaughter of lambs, circumcision at age 13, and polygamy. This kind of faith baffled me. Back in the U.S., I vowed to take my children abroad if I ever had the chance. That opportunity came in 1999 when Ron and I moved our family to Quito, Ecuador. Soon, however, I was dismayed at the feelings of emptiness that were creeping in at the corners of my life. How could I be so unhappy when my life was so full and exciting? It occurred to me that a spiritual community might offer some comfort. On our return to Madison in 2002, I joined the First Unitarian Society. Was I depressed, I wondered, or could mine be a spiritual illness? Busyness was not the solution I'd always taken it to be. I started reading and searching. I loved the church, the sense of meaning and purpose I felt there. In 2004, I asked my mother hesitantly, "Do you think I could be a minister?" "Of course I do," she said. I felt elation, then terror. I could barely articulate my spiritual beliefs. How could I accompany people struggling with spiritual questions when I was so at a loss about my own? The minister, Michael Schuller, directed me to the first offering of Quest. Supported by a UUA Chalice Lighters grant, a dozen wise souls in the congregation had labored thoughtfully over 2 years to create this 18-month spiritual development curriculum. Several months later, I joined 23 other questers for what would be a defining experience of personal and spiritual growth. We met monthly, first as a large group, then breaking into smaller circles of eight, called integration groups, described by Parker Palmer as circles of trust, for more personal sharing. I'll intersperse my description of the experience with some of my journaling then. I wrote, "I'm learning in my integration group that I can care for people I don't know and feel their care for me. I think a lot now about whether my questions of others are open-ended. Notice more often when I have an agenda and when others have one with me, but notice is the operative word. I don't feel the anger or irritation with them or myself as I used to. I just notice more." The implementation of a daily spiritual practice was at the heart of the curriculum. The Quest Steering Committee engaged professional practitioners of yoga, qigong, centering prayer, and insight meditation to instruct us, taking one monthly meeting to learn and practice each one, then 4 months to experiment and choose the practice we'd each use for the remaining year of the curriculum. I wrote, "The single most important impact of the Quest program for me has been the training, encouragement, and requirement that I commit to a daily spiritual practice. I had already begun a practice of daily reading and journaling prior to Quest, but it did not include the meditative peace that I now experience in centering prayer. So while I was gaining clarity, there was no quiet space to hear my own hesitant inner voice. Talking about the difficulties of the practice in our integration group has helped ground me in a real understanding that it is the practice, not results, that matter. It's helped a lot to learn that others were suffering from the same self-judgment about this." We each were assigned a spiritual companion, a person qualified and trained to listen and support us individually. I wrote, "I'm working my way through the bibliographies we've been given, and I'm learning a great deal about Unitarianism, comparative religion, poetry, and the Bible. I hope this program would help me in the discernment process about starting seminary and have a clear sense that it is. It's been so important to talk about this with my spiritual companion." The last important part of Quest was the 6 weekend retreats held 2 hours away at a Catholic retreat center where we came together for group ritual, workshops, activities, integration group sessions, and lots of time for silence, walking the labyrinth, journaling, and reflection. Oh, and yes, laughing, eating, and growing as friends and companions to each other as well. How did I change as a result of Quest? In 2006, I wrote, "My closest friends and family comment that I listen better, judge less, and am more reflective and grounded. My sense that this is true supports me in being more compassionate with others when I experience conflict. After years of denying my own feelings, I'm talking about them. I think a lot more about balance, work, exercise, social activities, relationship, contemplation. I consciously strive to have more balance among these and feel good about the changes I've made. I have daily experiences of being conscious or aware of my reactions, feelings, and physical sensations that I do not recall having prior to Quest. I'm so grateful for our words I rarely spoke before. I didn't consider myself to be an ungrateful person, but I didn't express my gratitude as I do now. Quite regularly, I find myself stopping in the middle of daily activity to notice something beautiful to which I would have been previously oblivious, and instead notice my interior response. I see the value and need for a regular program of self-care. I did not understand how lacking this was affecting my life in so many negative ways. Today, the cornerstone is my commitment to a daily spiritual practice. I enjoy time alone much more than before. I have found real value in regular journaling. It seems kind of a miracle to me that such substantial changes have happened in such a short time. I could not have made this progress without the loving framework Quest provided and the amazing people who made Quest possible with their dedication. It's an honor today to pay that love and dedication forward by being a part of creating Quest for those of you who dedicate yourselves to undertake it. I look forward to your questions and the opportunity to talk more. Oh, and by the way, I did not go to seminary. To close and come full circle with my remarks, I'll share with you something I wrote shortly before the end of Quest in 2006. I work to create a daily spiritual practice, my primary compass for navigating this uncharted territory, a sacred time for contemplation in the classical sense of so many of the religious or spiritual traditions I've observed at a distance. But this time it's mine. A space where I can begin to grasp my connection with something larger than myself. It feels like a ship coming towards me out of the fog. This ship is taking me on a journey to the most exotic place I've ever visited. I'm coming home to myself.
Hello, I'm Mark Zimmerer. Hearken what the inner spirit sings. There is no joy but calm. There is no joy but calm. That's a quote from Alfred Lord Tennyson, his poem, Song of the Lotus Eaters. My wife, Sue, saved a copy of that from a desktop Zen calendar that I had given her at least 15 years ago for Christmas. I've always loved the simplicity of the statement taped to the mirror of her closet, her cabinet, chest of drawers, bureau. I don't know what it was called, but I liked having that old piece of paper taped to that piece of furniture, reminding us every morning that there is no joy but calm. So that dented and scratched piece of furniture eventually moved to our son Tenji's room, still with the old quote attached, starting to get brittle and yellow. In fact, Tenji walked by the computer as I was typing this, and he said, "Hey, I recognize that saying. That's from my armoire." Most people don't recognize the state of calm as a state of joy nowadays, though. We live in a very busy world where we're not valued for who we are, but for what we can produce. We value ourselves and other animals less and less as living creatures and more as cogs in a machine. Rather than enjoying calm and quiet, we tend towards activities that keep us out of the moment, that keep us from seeing the world as it truly is. We like to be either caffeinated or sedated without doing the physiological work that might create those kind of sensations without artificial means. Our hedonistic lifestyles keep our minds so preoccupied and distracted that we don't realize we're in a pot of water slowly being raised to a boil. Don't worry, that's as fire and brimstone as you'll ever hear me get in a talk that starts with a quote from a Zen calendar circa 1994. Hedonism is the philosophy of using our lives to seek pleasure. But the problem with living the philosophy is that pleasure is fleeting. When all we think of is our own pleasure, we don't really appreciate the world we live in. We're too focused on our next fix. When we get used to pleasure and the pleasure disappears, as it inevitably will, we experience the lack of pleasure as pain. So really, the most hedonistic thing we could do would be to experience ourselves in our natural, neutral state. Quest is designed to help us out of our rut of pleasure-seeking frivolity. In keeping with Unitarian Universalist principles, the Quest program comes with a small pamphlet outlining its means and methods. It's very thorough. Drop my glasses. It's chock full of poetry and great quotes and a comprehensive plan for giving a group of people a solid set of tools and incentive for starting their own spiritual practice. Now, many of us may wish we had a practice but not have a clue about where to start. This may be it. To quote the Quest Manual, among the various world religions, one finds commonalities in the practices used to still and focus the mind, open the heart, and awaken and channel the energy of the body. The following are four important characteristics of spiritual or reflective practice. It helps sustain a connection to the presence of the sacred that is within us and beyond us. It grounds us in the present moment, bringing us into awareness of what is happening right now. It establishes a regularity and rhythm to our spiritual path, and it can help us become more aware of mental and behavioral patterns and support us in developing more healthy and functional patterns. And Quest strongly encourages participants to develop a spiritual practice, whether that practice be mindful meditation, centering prayer, Tai Chi, or yoga. whatever other benefits a spiritual practice might have, I find it helpful to be able to step back from the world occasionally and remind myself of where I am, looking at the world not just from my own small experience, but with a wider view. As yoga teacher Eric Schiffman says, the wave will experience its ocean nature when it relaxes into itself sufficiently to experience the depths of what it truly is. And as Elizabeth quoted from Jack Kornfield, the fruit of transcending our small self is the awakening of reverence, a newfound spirit of compassion and holy interdependence. For me, the appreciation of beauty, the awakening of reverence, the sense of gratitude you acquire is the most profound reason to have a spiritual practice. To quote John O'Donohue, whose writing is also represented in the Quest Manual, beauty does not linger, it only visits. Yet beauty's visitation affects us and invites us into its rhythm. It calls us to feel, think, and act beautifully in the world, to create and live a life that awakens the beautiful. Beauty touches and renews our hope when it takes us out of the grid of ordinary time and brings us to another place, a place where history ceases and the weight of memory relents, a place ever ancient and ever new. Quest, and any worthwhile spiritual practice, does not ask its participants to have otherworldly or out-of-body experiences, only to have the experience of being in their body without distractions, in the world as it exists. Blaise Pascal said, all of humanity's misfortune comes from one thing, which is not knowing how to sit quietly in a room. I think that Quest will help us to sit quietly in a room, whether you're on a chair or an ottoman or a divan. There is no joy but calm.